Gary Harris recorded his first album in 1950 as a sideman with Detroit tenor saxophonist Wild Bill Moore, and made his first album as a leader in 1958. I don't know how many more he's been on over the course of his six-decade career, but there have been quite a few under his own name and as a sideman for greats like Cannonball Adderley, Dexter Gordon, Illinois Jacquette, Coleman Hawkins, and Lee Morgan. His latest CD is called Barry Harris Live in Rennes, and it's being released to coincide with a week-long engagement at the Village Vanguard that runs tonight through this Sunday. It gives me much pleasure to welcome back to our show one of the world's greatest living jazz pianists and most respected music educators, Barry Harris. Hi.
Thank you very much.
I'll bet you're tired of hearing this question, but you're 81 years old.
80.
You're going to be 81 when?
December.
Ah, this coming December.
Yes.
Are you planning
to slow down? It's close, though. It's close.
Are you planning to slow down?
No. Heck no.
You've continued, I read, to take lessons, including studying with the classical pianist Sophia Rossoff.
Yeah. No, I mean, look here. I don't intend to stop. I will probably, you know, I'm one of the people who love plane rides. Most people don't like planes, you know. But, you know, I get on the plane. I go to sleep before the plane take off. I wake up in the air. And so I have a, it's a ball for me. I wake up, I go to sleep most of the way. And so then when I get to Europe, I'm in Europe.
I was thinking about those piano lessons. You've developed a unique harmonic system, and I would have thought that there wasn't much more that you could learn.
Oh, man, it's so much more, man. See what has happened now. You know, we call this jazz and stuff like that. I think really that we are the continuation of classical theory somewhere along the way it got lost, the key to improvisation. Some kind of way the Europeans messed up.
Well, they used to improvise, of course, during Bach's time, everybody improvised.
But they messed up. See, where they messed up was that they stopped doing it and started writing a lot, you know. And so one theorist over there in Holland told me this. He said, when they stopped improvising in Europe, they started improvising in the USA. Because that's improvisation is supposed to be forever. So what I've come to the conclusion is that we, jazz musicians, are the continuation of Bach, Chopin, because if they were alive, where do you think they would be playing? I ask you this question. Where do you think they would be playing? If they were alive today,
well,
these
Bach
great people
would be playing in a church or in a jazz or in a club.
Thank you. Because let me tell you something. Concert halls play dead people's music. They would be alive. So they would be in the corner bar, the same thing. There's one story about Bach where he had to end up going to the corner place where there was a little piano or something in there, and he started playing.
One of the tunes on your new CD is the venerable standard T for Two, and you've said that you still haven't mastered that tune.
Heck no.
Why is it so hard? Hey, would you say that about any song, or is it especially T for Two?
About any song.
But yeah. How many times can you improvise on the chord changes
of
a song like that and without repeating yourself?
A million times. That's what you're supposed to be able to do. You're supposed to be able to improvise on the song. You're even supposed to play the same song every tune in the club and play it different every time.
Well, Lester Young used to complain that too many jazz musicians were what he called repeater pencils.
Right. I call them tape recorders. You know, I mean, if you're going to take something off a record, you better take it off for one reason, to learn from it. Otherwise, if you just take that phrase, then all you've done is just been a tape recorder, and so you play that phrase, and that's our tendency.
Let's listen to a little bit of your version of T for Two and talk a bit about it, okay?
Okay.
That's all right, too. I almost sound like I could stride.
quite close to Thelonious Monk, and I've always loved the way he played Tifa, too. You kind of began that version in monk-like playing.
But you had to hear, there's a recording. Not a recording, it's a tape. Mm. They might come out in a few years. They might come out, these tapes. They're very special tapes. They're the Baroness's tape. So there'll be, it'll probably be called the Pannonica Collection.
Now, the Baroness was this famous jazz baroness who lived in New Jersey,
and
Thelonious Monk lived with her. You lived there as well for a while.
We lived there together. And so, see, what happened was Monk, there's a tape of him doing it. He did a boogie woogie. Did he try it?
Well, he was so open to everything in jazz history. But you've talked about playing boogie woogie when you were a kid. You and Berry Gordy, the guy who started Motown Records, you both were boogie woogie players in your high school in Detroit?
Oh, yes, boogie woogie piano player. We were pretty cool until a cat named Theodore Shealy came to town and came to our school, little cat from down Georgia or somewhere. Man, he could play. Not only could he play the best boogie woogie, he could improvise.
So where is he now? I know where Barry Gordy are.
He passed away. Oh.
Go ahead.
Well, he does a story about Berry Gordy. He went into this place to buy a hamburger, and some cats were sitting around in there. So he got it to take out. He went out, and one cat looked at the other cat and said, "You know what that fool's fixing to do? He's fixing to quit his job and start a record company." That fool. Oh, what a fool.
Well, did you ever think of starting your own record company?
No.
You've included a number of Monk's compositions in your repertoire over the years, and there are three on the CD. What is it about his songs makes him so special?
See, you should. It's something you said earlier, before we went on the air. You know, when Monk died, the first gig I had was at the Angry Squire. I don't know if you remember that. It was over on 7th Avenue.
23rd Street, right.
23rd, 7th Avenue, between 23rd and 22nd. Let me tell you, man, I played all Monk all night long. Now, the reason I could play Monk all night long, see, you got to think. He wrote a song on I Got Rhythm. He wrote a few songs on the blues. He wrote a song on Just You, Just Me. See, he wrote songs on songs.
He used the chord changes of other songs.
Of these songs.
But you never, except in a couple of cases, you really would, never, it would be difficult for you to figure out what.
But you'd be surprised. People could do it years ago. I'm not talking about just musicians. The people could do it. You know, they would know when Bird would play All the Things You're On, it might be called something else.
Or
when he played, or when you played How High the Moon. Anthology, but people would know. Mm-hmm. See, where we went to see Bird was at dances. See, people don't even understand that. I don't even know nothing about going to see Bird. I think one bar at the very end, but every time I ever saw Bird was at a dance, and I'd sat in with Bird. Between Bird and Gene Ammons, they were like my main things. Gene Ammons, whenever he came to town, I'd go to the, because he'd make junior mans get up, say, let Barry sit in. And I would sit in, you know.
Well, you said, my guess is Barry Harris, who I should remind you, begins a week-long engagement at the Village Vanguard that runs tonight through Sunday. He also has a new CD called Barry Harris Live in Rennes, a trio recording, and he'll be playing with the trio tonight. Charlie Parker was your first real inspiration for getting serious about jazz. And I remember talking to Tommy Flanagan, another pianist from Detroit, who said that he heard Charlie Parker said, "I want to do that," but he didn't know how to do it until he heard Bud Powell. And then he said Bud Powell laid it out for us all. And we opened with you playing a song that I associate with Bud Powell. All God's Children Got Rhythm.
Yeah.
You also have another Bud Powell song on this CD, I'll Keep Loving You.
Yes.
Which I play is the key.
He's the key. Well, see, you got to think, which is what a difference it is now. See, when we came up, every pianist, just about all of us, I could name names forever, we all believed in one thing, Bud Powell. And see, what happened is, from this way, we all came from Bud Powell, like this. Now what cats hear today is us who have come from Bud Powell. And so they hear a lot of things. We only heard one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We heard a little bit of, oh, no, there's a little bit of John Lewis. There's a little bit of...
Art Tatum?
No, yeah, Art Tatum. Well, of course, there's a whole... Art Tatum is everybody. You know, everybody plays like Art Tatum, you know, including Earl Garner. Everybody plays like Art Tatum because Art Tatum played... I would say that Art Tatum played everything. That's a good consideration. He played everything.
And faster than anybody. You started off in the church. And what happened when... what was the reaction of your mother who was teaching in the church when you said you wanted to play jazz instead of church?
She said just that. What do you want to play? You want to play jazz or you going to play the church music? I said, I would like to play jazz. And she said, okay. So when she said okay, that was it.
You've said that your personal favorite recording, or one of them anyway, was Live at the Jazz Workshop, and you had your new album
San Francisco.
And your new one is Live at Wren.
Yeah.
Do you prefer recording in front of an audience?
Yes, I do. It's more of a real. I can't even tell you. One time I even went in one of the studios here. It used to be a great big studio by Radio City Music Hall around the corner off maybe 51st. And the studio was so big. What I did, I took a whole group of my class so I could feel that I was in a club, you know, instead of in this big place with a trio, this big room, you know, with a small little trio. And, you know, you feel sort of, I felt sort of awkward in there, you know. And so it was, you know, I like live.
Just one more thing. So many musicians came out of the Detroit that you grew up in. Tommy Flanagan, Roland Hanna, Thad Jones, Donald Byrd, Billy Mitchell, Frank Foster, Yusef Lateef, Pepper Adams, Kenny Burrell, Doug Watkins, Paul Chambers, Elvin Jones.
Yes.
It's extraordinary. And then a whole second generation. I'm not even going to start mentioning some of the names. Why Detroit?
Because we love the music. And see,
Was it the school? I mean, you went to Northeastern
High School. I think it's mostly me, really, a lot of it. See, what happened was I was a very shy cat and small, puny, didn't do much sports or nothing like that. Whenever I'd leave school, I'd go right home to my piano. So all the musicians, all the young cats, we had bands in schools, but all the young cats knew Barry was at the piano. So Roland Hanna, you know what Roland Hanna told me? He said, Barry, me and Sonny Red used to climb those stairs to come to your house to learn to play changes. So Donald Byrd come to, all these people came to the house. Jameson, the bass player for Motown, mm-hmm. came to my house to learn. Johnny Griffith, the piano player, grew up two doors from me, where I lived. All those people, Motown was made by jazz musicians. See, most of these people, they say they don't like jazz, but they do like jazz because most of those jazz musicians are what made Motown, you know. They had to play a little different, but they're still jazz musicians. And so that my house became like a mecca. Yusef, all those people came to me, Joe Henderson, you know. The one that taught us a lot was Frank Foster. Mm-hmm. Frank Foster left college in Ohio, came to Detroit. He was very influential for us, Pepper Adams, all of us. We had a whole big group.
This is an interracial group, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's why I say integration. We didn't know what that meant. they said it's integration. We say integration. What does that mean?
Well, your house was a mecca, and the Village Vanguard has been a mecca for jazz quite a long time, since the 30s.
My house was like white, black, yellow, green, purple. people. You know, all kinds. We didn't find out about segregation until they told us about integration, you know, because we were so mixed up. There was the DeVito brothers. I can't
Frank
even think
Rosalino.
Of Frank Rosalino, man.
Barry, thank you so much for being with us, by the way. For ticket information about the performances of the Barry Harris Trio at the Village Vanguard, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. There's also this new CD called Barry Harris Live at Wren, and we're going to go out with something by Thelonious Monk that you're playing.
Thank you.
Off minor.
Okay. Well,